Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathy Kay, and I am a recovered compulsive eater. Today is Friday, August 27th, 2021, and we are reading in the Big Book on page 81, the second paragraph, which begins at the bottom of the page with, "Our design for living is not a one-way street." Our readers for today are Laura R. reading the 12 steps, Jess S. reading the 12 traditions, and Julie E. B. and Sherry K. B. reading the text. Our newcomer greeter is Alice G., and making announcements will be Betsy H. The reference numbers for yesterday are Thursday, August 26, 10 a.m. meeting. The share ID is 17,640. That's 17640. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Vision for You meeting, the reference number is 17,644 or 17644. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Laura R. to read the 12 steps of OA. Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Laura R., grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks, Kathy, and I pass.
Thank you, Laura R. Jess S., will you please read the 12 traditions of OA?
Hi, this is Jess S. from Compulsive Overeater from Wisconsin. The 12 traditions of OA. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to serve.
Thank you, Jess S. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinent requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 81, the second full paragraph that begins on the bottom of the page. And I will ask Julie E.B. to get us started. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. I'm Julie E.B., gratefully recovered from Colorado Springs. Our design for living is not a one-way street. It is as good for the wife as it is for the husband. If we can forget, so can she. It is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy. Well,
Julie, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. There's a lot of static in your background. Is there anything you can do about that or not?
There's not.
Okay. Go ahead. We can hear you. Okay.
All right. Driving to an OA retreat in Montana. I'm Julie E.B. and gratefully recovered today. And what is it that we can do in our amends? First of all, don't try to think about amends unless you're currently in step 8 and 9. They work 1 through 8, not only the first time, but I hear a lot of people going back and they hear amends of the last few weeks. And racking their brains, I heard this, so this came to me. And some of that is good, but I think it's great to remember that we always start on step 1, whether it's a relationship with a spouse, in this case, or relationships with someone at work, or all sorts of different kinds of brokenness. It is better not to arouse jealousy. So our point in making the amends is we want to make sure that what we're doing isn't creating more harm. Now, this way of life, this design for living, this is something that I can enjoy, and I can show my spouse perhaps how to enjoy, but not with lectures, not with even maybe with some invitations to listen to meetings and so on and so forth. But I know that my spouse, my family were most drawn to this program when they saw the changes in my life, that I was actually making amends, both living and real, and acting them out by what I was doing. And that is what builds the attraction in this program. So if I'm arousing jealousy, whether it's at work or with a spouse, whatever it is, in the event, I'm not bringing things in like other siblings or how our parents feel about us or other people that may have gotten into the relationship. The goal of the event is to make things quiet, just like for the food. Our goal is to get it to be quiet. Our goal is to bring our character defects and relationships into a state of serenity, even when there is calamity. Thanks for letting me share, and I'm happy.
Thank you, Julie E.B. Okay, I'm now going to take some names of people who would like to share, and please remember that if you shared in the last 2 days, that you step aside and let others share who might have not shared recently. Who would like to share this morning?
Kathleen O.
Cindy B.
Okay, Kathleen O. Who is after Kathleen?
Wendy B.
Wendy B.
Nancy L.
Nancy L.
Christy M.
Christy M. I can take one or two more names.
Tamara C.
Camera C. Anyone else? Okay. So we have Kathleen O, Wendy B, Nancy L, Christy M, and Camera C. Okay. Kathleen, please share with us.
Good morning, Kathy. Thank you for your service. This is Kathleen O in Northern Compulsive Overeater in Northern California. So it is better, however, that one does not needlessly name a person upon whom she can vent jealousy.
Ugh.
That's not me. Sorry. jealousy can consist, and jealousy consists of one or more emotions, such as anger, resentment, inadequacy, helplessness, or disgust. That's what I found when I looked up the word jealousy. So, you know, these paragraphs are generally speaking to the man regarding his wife. And of course, women cheat too, including the women who are cheating with another person's husband. And these were like humiliating amends, and they're ones that I wanted to skip. You know, there can be some dread and fear about these difficult amends. And I was just told by my sponsor to be willing. And I, you know, I'll humble myself here and say that, you know, when I was young and dumb, I cheated. And I cheated with a married man, and you know, I did end up making amends to this person who I had done harm once I got in recovery and worked these steps. If I hadn't done this, I probably never would have done it. But it was about making right the wrong I committed. And you know, in making these types of amends, I found that saying to this person that I regretted my behavior, that seemed more important than just saying I'm sorry, because I don't know, for me, I'm sorry didn't seem to carry that depth and weight that we're looking for in making these amends. And I've also been cheated on. And, you know, personally being cheated on, I was thankful to know the person who was involved. This paragraph says we don't needlessly name the person, but for me, if she knew, I wanted to know.
or if other people knew when they did, I wanted to know. So, you know, thankfully I was in 12-step recovery when I learned this person's name, so I was able to forgive my husband in time. But it's much more difficult. It was much more difficult for me to forgive the other woman for some reason. And sometimes I'm not sure I ever did or I have forgiven her. It's a tough one. But, you know, the helpful part of recovery is I didn't need to go vent to this woman. On page 81, it tells us perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with, quote, the girl who understands. And I could picture my husband feeling sorry for himself and this woman buying into it. So that kind of helped me, you know, try to be a little more forgiving because I know she felt sorry for him, you know. And would I love to vent and tell her that what she should have done was tell my husband to work on his marriage and take a hike? Yeah, but it wouldn't do any good and wouldn't serve any purpose. So, you know, as the wife of an alcoholic, as it states in the big book, I did get worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. So it does set the perfect stage for the alcoholic to find, quote, that girl who understands. So, you know, I know today that real love is having the other person's happiness a priority. And one really great benefit of working the steps on a daily basis is having a change in behavior and not entertaining the thought of cheating or creating harm. And, you know, living amends is changing how I treat people. So our design for living, you know, 28 tells us a new life has been given to us, a design for living. And so this isn't about making ourselves feel better at the expense of others. We have a new way of life. We behave differently. You know, people begin to notice we're changing for the better. And we can usually talk honestly with others as long as we don't cause harm to others. And I pass. Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathleen. Oh, Wendy B., please share with us.
Yeah, hi, this is Wendy B., recovered in Arizona. And, you know, in this paragraph, you know, so Bill's an alcoholic, and he's speaking about his wife that is an Al-Anonic, and he's speaking about both of them, you know, working a program, using the steps, you know, as a design for living, where we confess our faults and make amends. And he probably knows from experience how the Al-Anonic mind works, you know, how we obsess over things, you know, that go around and around in our mind and hold us in bondage. And so, you know, I believe that this directive, you know, to not needlessly name a person, you know, to arouse jealousy in her is really a kindness to the Al-Anonic wife. You know, so she doesn't fixate on it and have it bother her, you know, the rest of her life and cause her suspicion. You know, and I can relate to this as an Al-Anonic and an alcoholic. You know, I come from both. And that obsession of the mind really is troublesome. And thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Wendy B. Nancy L., please share with us.
This is Nancy L. Thank you for the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope this morning. I stand amazed every time, and I've been in this program 7 years, and every time I hear the steps, I stand amazed at the wisdom that was incorporated into these steps. And I think when you're dealing, I know when my family and I were dealing with the disease of addiction with alcohol, and then my food addiction, which I didn't even know, I didn't even recognize. I was too focused on the other person. But yeah, there was cheating and there was lying and cheating on both parts. It's not a one-way street, that's for sure. And the jealousy, I was so interested to hear. I have never heard Al-Anons called Al-Anonics. What a good name for those of us that are so codependent on another person who was suffering from addiction. Yeah, jealousy is an ugly, ugly thing, and it rears its head not only with a sexual encounter, but with anything that happens, jealousy can rear its ugly head. I'm so grateful for sponsors and counselors that have walked with me through this journey of making amends and pointing out to me that there will be amends that if I tried to make them, I would injure somebody else and somebody else that didn't deserve to be hurt. And well, nobody deserves to be hurt, but I'm so grateful for step nine when it describes how we're to go about making our amends. We don't want to do any harm. I appreciate the shares that we've had already this morning and the reading. And thank you for letting me share, and I will pass.
Thanks so much, Nancy L. Christy M., please share with us. Christy, press star one. I don't hear you.
Oh, all right. Can I be heard?
Yeah, now I can hear you. Thanks.
Awesome. Well, I'm Christy M., a grateful recovering bulimic and anorexic in Oregon. And I so appreciate this reading right now as I'm working through the eighth and ninth step with my sponsor. And some of what I was thinking in terms of the amends making with the spouse is just like the work that has to be done to get to that point in the prior steps, that before you can make amends, it really starts with your heart and that place of humility of first being able to see your wrong in that. When it talks about, you know, the woman maybe who understood, you know, we can really justify and rationalize our behavior and maybe think we don't need to make amends. And I just think how important that journey is beforehand of looking at ourselves to even get to that point where we know why and who we have to make amends to. Because so much of life in this disease can be spent feeling like a victim and not really feeling like you've done a lot of wrong and that it's everybody else's fault. So just how important the steps are and the journey up into that point so that your mindset is in such a place of humility to make the amends. And really going through the amends process, I feel like that healing doesn't happen if you're not coming at it from a place that this amends is not about you. At the end of the day, like, you benefit, you get the healing from making the amends, but it's really, you have to approach it about the other person. And I think that's why the steps talk about, you know, you don't cause any more harm. Sometimes the amends isn't words, it's a behavior, it's a change in behavior towards that person. Sometimes it is words, and sometimes that words and approaching that person would inflict more harm. And in order to know which type of amends you need to do, you really have to be in that place of, it's not about me. It's not about me feeling better. I'm not doing this for myself. And I don't think that the healing comes if you're not putting the point of that amends to be, you know, making it right for the other person. And if that's not your first and foremost, kind of like this says, arousing more jealousy. If you go in to make that amends and you're there to make yourself feel better, to get things off your chest, then you inflict more harm. So I just think how important it is to really have done the step work before that of knowing your character defects, of really looking at your side of the street and going into amends, putting that person's needs at the foremost. And I think, you know, the benefit does come that there is healing for you. There can be pain, there can be discomfort, but I don't know that the healing comes if you don't really put the person that you have harmed and their needs in that situation first. So it's something that I'm really thinking deeply about as I go through my amends making of, you know, what type of amends I need to do in a situation in terms of the harm I've done. And it just is a reminder to keep that at the center of the needs and what that person needs and not so much myself. So thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Christy. Camera C, please share with us.
This is Tamara C. Did you call me?
I did. Thank you, Tamara.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your service. Good morning, Tamara C. from California. At first, I didn't like this paragraph. I was like, what? Is this telling me that I know better, like, what's best for my partner, and I'm supposed to tell him how he's supposed to live his life? And I thought, well, that doesn't really sit right with what I'm learning in the rest of the program. So let me just focus first on, like, what is my design for living, and then go from there. So it was good. It was good for me to reflect on, yeah, what is this new way that my higher power has shown me through the steps? I have this new way of responding to people and circumstances because I've had a spiritual awakening. I'm still having a spiritual awakening. I'm still experiencing this rearrangement of the way that I think and this healing of my old ideas. So I'm learning to see people as being just who they're supposed to be. And I'm learning that when I'm disturbed, the problem is in me, not in them. And I can look at, what is it in me that makes me think I have to react the way that I do? What am I making their behavior mean? And my new design is of service and self-sacrifice. My old way was to make sure I get what I want so I'm okay. And today I'm okay because I have a higher power. So I can really focus on what can I do for others. And so this whole idea that it's not a one-way street, like in my domestic relationship, my husband has a higher power and it's not me. So it's not my job to determine who he's supposed to be or how he's supposed to act, but I am responsible for my part in the relationship. So I don't need to contribute to behavior that contradicts my new design for living. I think in this example, they're talking about, you know, naming names so that the spouse can be jealous or do harm. But I can look at, you know, what are things that I bring that contribute to harm rather than service and self-sacrifice. And for me, it might be just coming home from work and complaining about people, or joining in into gossip about family members. And so I just keep practicing my new design for living and let it bring healing into our relationship, and just really watch out for service and not harm in anything that I contribute. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks so much, Tamara C. Okay, I can take some more names of people who would like to share. And please remember, if you shared in the last 2 days, hang back a bit to let others get a chance to share. Who would like to share?
Drew D. in California.
Jude B?
That's Drew. Drew.
Oh, Drew. I'm sorry, Drew.
No worries.
Okay.
Darian K.
Mary Ann K, is that what it was?
Darian. Darian.
Darian K.
Yep.
Thank you.
Kim C, Colorado.
Kim C in Colorado.
Rella R from Brooklyn.
Rella R in Brooklyn. Anybody else? Okay, we'll start with these then. I have Drew B, Darian K, Kim C, and Rella R. Please share with us, Drew.
There we go. thanks. I'm still pretty new to this format. Is that all right if I just share on the reading so far?
Absolutely. Welcome.
Thank you very, very much. Love being here. Really appreciate the recovery in these rooms. The reading for me about the amends was really helpful because it reminds me that I don't have to be in charge of other people or how they affect me. I think for a long time I connected to trying to manage other people's emotions And I know in the reading, it sounds like there's a thoughtfulness about making sure I don't share something that is unhelpful to someone else, but that doesn't seem like it comes at the cost of honesty, and it certainly is something that I can discuss as a group and in community, and that has been such a tremendous gift. It's something I still don't fully understand how a community of sick people could get better together. That seems like a spiritual reality. It doesn't seem like a calculus of the world, and so I am very, very grateful for how this reading, I think, touches on the larger reality that I don't have to make my peace someone else's job. I get to work on that with this group, with this community, with this literature. So I just wanted to claim my seat. So I was so very grateful and grateful that I get to do my best to serve others and in the program and those around me. So thanks again, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Drew B. Darian K., please share with us.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. So this is Darian K. I'm in the Berkshires in Massachusetts. Great to be on the line with all of you. So a design for living is really what I did not have before program. I didn't have any design. It was go with the flow, whatever you liked, I liked. I just didn't know. I didn't know what my preferences were, my hair color. I didn't know. It was anything that you liked, because I'm the ultimate people pleaser. So for me to read this and know, that this is part of it, and it's never a one-way street. Take it out of context into sponsorship, and I know for a fact that, I get as much from my sponsors as, they hopefully get from me. So the whole program is just that in one sentence, a design for living. That's not a one-way street. And, I've made many amends and, gotten various reactions. But the bottom line is I did it for me and because I had to. Like, there was just no choice. Whether they were painful or uncomfortable, and again, if I'm a people pleaser, they're super uncomfortable and risky and feel terrible. But I knew that in order to stay in recovery, in order to work my program the very best I could and stick with the winners, they used to say in program, I needed to do what they did. And so I did many of them that again felt uncomfortable but needed to be done. And also utilize that tool of sponsorship to run things by someone knowledgeable of these steps so that I was doing the right thing or saying the right thing or saying enough, because I am definitely someone who just says sorry and then ends. So, saying more than sorry is important for me to make sure that I say more than that. So I'm just very grateful for that. And with that, I'll pass.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, thank you so much, Darian. Kim C., please share with us.
Hi, it's actually Kim T., as in Tom.
Oh, sorry.
From Colorado.
Okay.
Oh, no problem.
Got it.
Let's see. What's really been sticking a knife in my gut, so to speak, this morning is the character defect of jealousy. And a person said earlier, something with about character defects and picking up, and if you don't get rid of them, you will pick up. That was the gist of it. And that was absolutely my story. So today is day one again, and it's humbling, and I'd really rather just beat the hell out of myself than to admit that and to start working the steps again, because that's my go-to place, hatred of myself and everything. And as I'm listening, I'm also realizing how this all started well, it all started because I'm a compulsive reader, but, you know, I started looking at others and saying, I want this, I want that, I'm jealous of this, I'm jealous of that, my husband's not doing it right, my kid's not doing it right. And that character defect of jealousy is overwhelming for me, is absolutely overwhelming and takes me out, and has before this time too. So I just wanted to claim my seat because I haven't shared on this meeting in a really long time. And if you're new, welcome, or if you're coming back, welcome. This is a very strong fellowship, and I just really appreciate it. And I was thinking about Design for Living, and that is such a powerful phrase and sentence in the big book, and that's what I need, a design for living. And I felt like I had that for a while, and I can get it back with the help of my higher power, my sponsor, fellows in the program, and I just need to show up when my natural inclination is to run and hide and eat. So I appreciate your service, and I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Kim T. And Ruella R. from Brooklyn, please share.
Hi, this is Rella R., a recovering compulsive overeater. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you, everyone, for your honest shares. So after having done my fourth step, I think it was a little over a year ago, I was reduced to just a couple of people that I needed to make amends to, which surprised me because I have a lot of guilt. My home program is ACOA. I'm an adult child, and I've been living with chronic guilt. So for me to even tease out, like if someone felt badly around me or if someone was upset, I must be guilty. So it was work with my sponsor to tease out if I had actually done something that I needed to make amends for. Because I'm, you know, I'm the kind of person that if someone bumps into me, I'm the one who says I'm sorry. So I would apologize all over the place. But I'm learning to do it with more... I'm learning to do it with my higher power in mind, with the knowledge that I can't fix things. The other person may not be absolutely mollified. Did I really do something wrong? And I need to run this by a sponsor or a fellow, something for which I need to apologize. And learning to apologize without making excuses, without feeling like a victim, because that's one of my go-to places. I'm always feeling like I'm the one who's been wronged. So, yeah, when I do this soberly, it's not as easy as I would have, you know, thought. Oh, I can apologize. I have no problem. I'm always doing so. I'm always wrong. So I need to work with compassion, a lot of compassion for myself and forgiveness for myself and all my ACOA laundry list, the sense of over-responsibility, you know, walking around feeling as though I'm guilty for anything that happens in the world. But to look around realistically and soberly and see where in my, you know, in my own circle where I need to make amends and not to cheapen it, like not to drop sorries all the time, because then it just takes away the quality and the value of it. I need to be more circumspect and discerning about and honest about when I do apologize and make amends and try to figure out what's also like finding out why I say things or do things, like what was triggering, what was prompting me, you know, doing the halt, doing a little bit of introspection. So thank you for this topic and thank you all. And I know that I need to keep coming back. I know I've been a little derelict in my reading and I've not been in touch with my sponsor for quite a while, and I know that I these all affect the quality of my program. So one day at a time, I'll keep coming back. Thank you all, and blessings to all. I pass.
Thank you, Rilla. Okay, we still have time for a few more shares. Who would like to share today?
Nadia B.
Nadia B. Who else?
Jennifer H.
Jennifer H. Who else?
Courtney B. Yes.
Okay, I think I heard Courtney B. and Craig F. Was that right?
Tony B. Tony.
Oh, Tony B. and
Tony.
Craig. Tony B. and Craig F. Okay. Anybody else? All right. Why don't we start with you all? I have Nadia B., Jennifer H., Tony B., and Craig S. Nadia, please share with us.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you so much for your service. Nadia B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. And great discussion. I'm so grateful to have this program. And I'm grateful for people that have guided me through the work of the steps. And, you know, the steps are what my understanding of the process today and the program in general, the program of recovery, is, you know, that it's a specific process and the steps are in order for a reason. You know, as a result of this work, I have learned, you know, to assess my motives. And I think this is, for me personally, this was what this paragraph is talking about. It is not a one-way street, but I have to assess my motives, and that's what I learned to do in step four. And then in step five, I have learned to hear myself, you know, as I'm sharing my side of the story. And I definitely have experience with this because I have looked for love in all the wrong places, of course. And you know, as a result of it, my life, of my process of living, my life had become completely unmanageable. And so, you know, for me today, understanding why I'm doing what I'm doing is very important. And so I cannot start, you know, I cannot do certain things just to relieve myself of certain feelings, of certain emotions. I have to ground it all in reality. And I'm very grateful for a sponsorship, for healthy, you know, relationships that I've established in this fellowship, for everybody who has been able to connect me to this higher power and, you know, be so I could see the truth. So I could see the truth in my own, with my own eyes. I don't have to go to anybody for any solutions. The solutions, the principles are the same. And when I assess my motives, when I look at why I do what I do, it becomes very clear. For me, God's way is very simple. Mine is very complex and complicated, and I sometimes complicate a lot of things. And so I've learned that this process, steps 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, are very important, thank you, in preparation for this specific step. And we have to be very careful with how we proceed in life, just as well as, you know, with this step, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Nadia B. Jennifer H., please share with us.
Hi, I'm Jennifer H., a recovered compulsive overeater in North Alabama, and I'm grateful to everybody for their service. And this one, I'll try to share a little bit. It's something I haven't figured out how to talk about too well. But I really like how the paragraph, basically I'm taking it as, you know, the way to avoid this hideous pit of jealousy. I mean, avoiding that is, you know, both parties in it can, you know, can benefit from that. And then, so if I look at it that way, you know, it really helps me that I want to look at I can't control the other person. So what's my part that I can do something about. And one thing's for sure, I can turn it over to God, because I don't want to go into that pit again where I get into the self-pity and the jealousy and feeling like a victim, like everyone's kind of been here and there, or several people have. That if I go into that, I can, luckily now, thank you, God, I guess, due to the food not blocking and the other character defects having been removed to whatever extent God has, you know, I can see when I'm going into that, and that just doesn't work. It doesn't work, because then I have decided that my higher power is not taking care of me, but that it's somebody who's doing things and arranging things in the world to hurt me, and I just cannot look at the world that way. So, in my marriage, the disease, of course, blocked us from each other, and, we both were able to share how we felt attraction, but as far as I know, didn't take any action, and we were able to say, well, that's understandable. Disease was blocking the crap out of us interacting with each other, and, so I'm really grateful that that wasn't something that we punched each other over too much, but I can take this same thing, y'all have told me that the sex inventory and everything is also for all relationships, and so in anything that happens, even in my relationships with God's living creatures, this one's going to sound funny, maybe strange, but in my yard, even if army worms destroy my entire yard, which I loved so much, my little yard lawn that I worked so hard on, I can see myself as a victim, or I can look at it like, what's my part in this? What can I see that I'm, what can I do? Why is this thing here in front of me? I mean, what would God have me do? And try to look at it instead of as fall into a pit of victimhood, like maybe I'm the one who can figure out some natural way. God's going to give me the ability to have some natural way to keep these things from destroying everybody's, yard and lawn. So I don't know if that makes sense, but if I can look at it as, okay, the same as with the disease, this is the problem. Now, what are we going to do about it, God? What can I do about it? Instead of falling into that pit of jealousy and self-pity that nobody else in the neighborhood had this problem. Why did God pick me, and everything. So I'm really grateful to you guys for being here, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer H. I made a mistake and calculated wrong in terms of how much time we have left. So, Tony and Craig, I'm going to ask that you each take a minute. Sorry about that. Tony, go ahead.
My name is Tony, compulsive overeater. Thanks very much for everybody's service on the call and the sharing. I really love coming to these meetings. To be quite honest, I was a bit in and out of it. I won't take up much time, but I'm on day 3 at the moment, and I start to walk with my sponsor again. We're walking the steps. He insists that I have 48 hours of abstinence before I begin walking the steps. So yesterday I started on the doctor's opinion, and I'm up to Bill's story today and the podcast, Hal and G's podcast. And it's a fantastic way of life, all because a woman sent me on this man's details. And even though he sponsored me before, he doesn't sponsor me anymore. But I've tapped into a resource of magic, to be quite honest. That's what I call it. Overeaters Anonymous is magic. So I'll pass it on. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tony. Keep coming back. And Craig, can you give us a minute of your share, please?
Yeah, this is Craig F., recovered in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I didn't hear what you said because I was on muting.
We only have a minute left, if you can.
All right, let me grab that minute then.
This
idea that the harm to others was added early on in the program, because in Akron at Dr. Bob's house, there was a couple coming to meetings there, and a woman admitted to her husband that she'd been having an affair, and he flipped out and not only drank again but disappeared, and they found him a year later, I believe, in an asylum somewhere. And I don't believe he ever came back. I don't think he ever got back into recovery. And but that was the kind of harm that they were seeing. But I, for us, I think there's sometimes there's a greater harm. You know, I see harm in my children, from my sons, from knowing too much about my history and seeing the harm that it caused, maybe threw them a little bit too much to the kind of a prudish side. And you know, and then the other thing I'm going to say real quickly is that we have to be careful, especially I have to be careful, that when I'm looking at these things, that I'm not doing it out of ego, that, you know, that I don't have some vestige of pride left in me about how many, you know, how many women that I got to go to bed with me, or how, you know, that I'm doing this, I'm coming humbly to say that I've caused a great deal of wreckage in my wake, and that I have to do the best I can to clean up that wreckage and clean up that waste. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig F., and thanks to all of you who have shared and listened today. I'm sorry we have to quit, but what a great meeting. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Sherry KB, would you please read a vision for you?
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.